Jan here from Uncovering the Seniors. We just finished recording the episode with Karin Wikström today, so I want to tell you a bit what we actually will talk about. She's a singer, composer, and electronic artist, and we speak about her different music releases that she did. For example, her collaborations such as Shitney and Pistol 9. But we also speak about her solo album. And the difference between working in collaboration versus doing everything yourself. We also speak about different forms of release, because, for example, Karin released music on Headband in Matchbox boxes or on vinyl. And we have a general talk about how she came to the scene in Copenhagen and how her time here has been. It's a very nice conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. Here we go.
Yes.
Welcome to Uncovering the Seniors, our podcast about the avant-garde scene here in Copenhagen. I'm Jan Kaderreit, and I'm here with my constant co-host, Jan Arne Raunes.
Good morning.
And today our guest is Karin Wikström. Mm? Karin is a great singer and electronic artist. Is that yeah. a fitting description?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Composer, and maybe a composer?
Yeah, also very that, much. Yeah. Yeah. Hmm? Arranger?
Do a lot of big band arrangements, right?
Not so much.
Not so much.
But if I remember it correctly, you also did some theater music or corporations?
Yeah,
or dance?
I mean, yeah, I've been doing that. It was a long time ago since I did anything like that. But I really like collaborations with different art forms.
Yeah.
Depending on, like, of course, it's also like you're playing with musicians. If you find a person that you click with, that you have some kind of, in some weird way, you have some kind of common grammatics to look at some things and try to express something. I have been lucky to work with a choreographer, Martin Forsberg, who has been here in Denmark for several years, and now he has moved to Sweden to work at a dance company in northern part of Sweden, so we don't work right now, but yeah, I enjoy all sorts of like combinations of weird, or no, not necessarily weird, but just to get inside another mind, another way of seeing things. Like if you're a choreographer or a dancer and you look at a piece of paper where there's some shapes written into it, they will automatically read it in a totally another way than a musician would.
Like a graphic notation
kind of? Yeah, for example. Yeah. I mean, that's just one of the things. Maybe they see it from like, oh, it's like the movements on the floor, like if, as if they see it from the top down, you know? That's just one of those things that are like you just have another preference of like how you see things.
So you have done performances where you've written a graphic score and given them to musicians and dancers at the same time. Is that something you've tried?
Only as maybe experiments or so, but mostly I've been writing music and performing, also using my body as, you know, a musical, you know, a combination of a dancer and a musician.
Yeah. Wonderful, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that was some years ago, but yeah. I would love to do more of those things.
Yeah, sounds really interesting. Yeah. Now I just got, you put a really good image in my head with this graphic notation thing, but like, what happens if you just put too many artists in a room and give them like a piece of paper?
Yeah.
what does that turn into? And now you have 35 minutes to do something together.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be coherent.
That sounds like a cross collaboration in the conservatory with the art
Maybe,
school,
yeah.
with the dance school.
Yeah, but that's how it started, actually.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
When I went to conservatory, I got in touch with this choreographer, and I've worked with him several times after that. I mean, that was like in the old days when I went to the conservatory, the school was very different. And
Was it RMC, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was very traditional jazz back then?
It's hard to describe, but it was not so much about the art or a lot of my peers did super interesting things. It's not like it was totally an artless school, but I mean, in terms of teaching, that was not the main focus.
Okay.
It
was more the craftsmanship or something.
Yeah, more of that, and maybe to become... Yeah, that you should broaden your like skills, and you should be both able to play bossa nova and African music and salsa and pop music, or you know, is like this.
Yeah.
You could do anything. You could fit into any
box.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's kind of how my bachelor was in Amsterdam, that it was very focused on giving the skills, and then they just expected everyone to find the expression themselves.
Mm.
But then the school still organized the collaboration with the dancers?
Yeah.
And so that's how you met Michael
Fosberg? Martin.
Martin, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
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 Cool?
Yeah.
So when did you go to school?
Oh, let's say it was a while ago. No, I finished in 2006.
Yeah. Did you live here before that, or did you just come for the school?
Yeah, I came for the school.
Yeah.
Just
like I'm Swedish.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But you stayed since, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I started with living in Sweden, like the first 3 years, and then for the last 2 years, I moved over to Copenhagen.
Oh, in Malmö?
Yes.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's
something in the scene must have captured you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the school was really, really good for me in many ways because, I mean, I met so many people and some of them I still play with.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also the scene was already, I mean, it was different back then, but it was... For me, it was a big difference between Sweden and Denmark at that point. When I started my first band, Attaboy, we made this demo CD, just something, and we gave it to Jazz House, and they booked us, and it was. Actually almost sold out. It was like completely full with people that were just curious.
Yeah.
And it,
wonderful.
You know, it was other times back then, but that was really, that was really surprising to me.
Yeah.
That people were so open and curious and just sitting in the front row and like, oh yeah, let's hear that. And in Sweden it would be, or my like maybe a bit coarse prejudice about comparing Swedes and Danes, it was like, okay, if it would be in Sweden, the people would go to the like most back seats, and sit there with folded arms and be a bit skeptical about, okay, can't they play, or like that was my perception, at least. Maybe it's more like that now. When it's hard to say anything general, maybe, but it's. I feel it's a bit more like that now. Here also in Denmark,
can they play vibe.
Maybe it's because there's so much music coming out, and people. People maybe they don't have the same kind of curiosity to go out and hear something they've never heard about. Or,
I mean, definitely not at Jazz House, I feel. But
or, yeah.
Yeah, Alice. Or...
But yeah, like Alice or, I mean, Five Vee Mondays Club was, was totally that place, I mean, but with a very small audience, I guess.
Dreamy also, I guess. But there's maybe less variety, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's more specialized. That's another way of saying it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And I think it's also now, like maybe it's just a feeling also from my side that it shifted it a little bit now. But that's more only students now.
Club Primi?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You don't know. I mean, 5E was quite student focused at some point, right?
Like, yeah,
there were always some other people, but
and I mean. Yeah. Like, students can afford to play for 50 kroners, right?
Yeah, that's awesome.
And
they're willing to,
If you're like a real human with real needs, then you probably need something to feed yourself. I don't know.
But yeah, I mean, I came here, I think, 4 years ago. And already at that time, Jazz House, I didn't have that... impression that Jazz House would let someone just play there and people would come and love the new music or be excited about it. I thought always that was other places. Jazz House seemed already very established to me. I mean, still a step below Montmartre, I guess, but
A different genre. There's a genre split there.
I don't know why. I mean, that was just the impression when I arrived here, and some things have definitely changed. Maybe people just want to see Netflix and like they, you know, in the evenings.
I think that's probably a point, but I don't know if people want to see like Netflix. I think that's the thing.
Because
I think there is, it's very easy.
Yeah.
But when you're bored, you're like, you have to do something. But when you always have, you can just be content with something.
Yeah.
But I mean, like a lot of clubs say that the visitor numbers have been going down over the years, right? Like with the internet coming and everything.
Just that.
But so that's
We need to sabotage the internet. That's our next plan.
Whenever we
apply for some,
is that a task for the podcast?
Not for the podcast, but if we get all the guests from the podcast and then we like get it, we start like a unity and then we can apply from the some money from the Danish state and then we can destroy the internet. It's a plan.
No, we just only turn it off when someone has a concert.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, when someone like in this group, when someone in this group that joined this union, we turn off the internet and the whole internet. And it dies for like 1 hour.
So then people go like, what do we do? I mean, go to this concert.
Maybe we should do it a little bit before, actually, so people have time to get to the concert.
And also, but then you have to be totally on the internet to make lots of advertise so people just remember by heart, like, where is it?
Oh, that sounds complicated.
Yeah. No, but we can also, like, because you have this Earth Hour where they shut off the light for an hour.
So we
get a brand deal with the Earth Hour.
Yeah.
So it's like anti-internet hour. Like, but it happens kind of randomly.
That angle I think sounds quite good, actually.
Yeah, but it's only self-serving, self-serving. Yeah, but this is how it looks to the the internet is banned for people, but it's only about coming to our concert.
Okay, that's a marketing strategy right there. So that band that you played at Jazz House with. Was Ataboy, you said?
Yes.
Wonderful.
Did you record the slow motion jogging live there? Or
because
it sounded like, because I listened to it.
That's actually our second album. I don't really record. No, I think that was from like a tour. We played in different spaces. Maybe it was in Sweden somewhere, that particular recording with. I don't remember.
Because I was listening to it and I realized like suddenly, oh, this is live. Like, there's some like track 6 or something with the first verse, you can hear like someone actually reacting.
Yeah.
It's always interesting when It's like flipping everything on its head when you think something is something and it's just like, oh, it's something else. Like,
yeah. It's actually life, yeah.
Yeah.
But now suddenly I realize I'm a bit older than I think, because it's like, it feels like a lifetime ago with that. So, yeah, it was, yeah. I hardly remember. I haven't heard it for years. Mm. So, yeah.
It's quite an ambitious album, huh? Like, there's a lot of people on stage and a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we had some strings. Yeah, yeah, normally it was just a quartet.
Okay.
With bass, drums, trumpet, and voice.
Yeah.
And then we added strings.
But there were more horns also, weren't there?
No.
No, maybe. I think you're right. I think you're right.
Unless I forgot we had the guest for a song.
Maybe I just really imagined, like, put some extra layers.
Yeah.
Okay, but then if this is so long ago, let's speak about maybe some music that's more connected to you right now in the mind.
Yeah.
I mean, we could speak. I really love Up Up Up, your solo album.
Oh yeah.
Great album.
Mm, thank you.
And that's 2 years old now, right? Mm-hmm. 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you can speak a bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful.
Thank you.
It's maybe you just start with speaking a bit about it. You do everything on the album yourself, right? Like you play all the instruments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was kind of a dogma that I just wanted to try out to do everything alone. As an experiment. Because I really love working together with people. And having that process of not knowing, like, okay, I came with this song, but then it turned into this because of that person said something, and that you get totally lost in, like, also, like, in ownership or who made what and how did it become like this. That kind of development, I think it's super interesting and inspiring. I've been doing that, like, for most of my recordings, having this like a deep collaboration with people, even though maybe I have composed something that you finish it together, that you create something together. Mm. For this record, I was just curious to see like what happens if I don't get those like inputs from other people, like what is my sound without anyone. It was really because still, I mean, everything is so influenced by anything that I've heard during my entire life. Probably you get so many inputs anyway, like and you just filter it through yourself, and but I was just curious to see, like, what is it? What does my head sound like if I just try to work alone? And it was really hard. It took a long time to finish the record. Also, of course, a lot of doubts back and forth. Oh, should I go this way or should I go that way? Should this be a concept album of only this kind of, or should it be everything mixed together, and you know, all those thoughts that you have, like, in that process. But and it was really nice to finish it and to be done with that, because it's really boring to work alone. So you get so fed up with your own ideas. But still, I'm still thinking maybe I should do another solo album that tries out some other things. But that's still, I'm not sure. Maybe I should definitely do it in another way, and have a shorter time span to do it in, to not get lost in like speculations about
So then you want to have the concept ready before, or do you want the concept to developed
no
your
concept,
yeah, either or. I mean, it could go any direction, but maybe just to put a time limit on and say, okay, if I just manage to make 3 minutes worth of music, then it's that. Or in this time span, if it's 2 hours of music, then it's that. Or you know, because it's a good challenge. I think it's nice to challenge yourself with new things that you don't necessarily know if you succeed or if the outcome is going to be great.
Yeah. It's always a dangerous word, huh? At least this finishing. What you hope something is supposed to be is always the most dangerous thought, kind of, because it seems to, at least for me, it seems to hinder me more than help.
Yeah.
Like, or the maybe it's like some sort of ego ambition or something, like, and then it's just like, oh, it, in my head, if I was great, it will be great, and then it's something else, which might also be interesting, but it's not the thing that's...
I have one friend that I often speak to when I'm working on my own project just by myself, and he always tells me, perfect is the enemy of done. Like, he tells them to me almost every time I speak with him, because otherwise I will never finish anything, because it's not perfect yet, you know, it's not great enough yet. Like, I totally have these doubts all the time.
Of course, that's also, but a certain amount of imperfection is really mandatory for me to, like in all things that I've recorded and so on. I think, there has to be some flaws. Because I mean, it's still, and perfect is not very interesting either to me.
It
can be perfect in very many different ways.
I didn't think of the fully polished way or something.
Course, I understand. It was also a friend of mine, a poet in Sweden, who also said, like, well, I mean, you know, I'm 35 or whatever his age was back then. I'm doing this book, and it has to have some like quite lousy poems in there, because the other poems that are great, they will stick out. And also, this is not the last book. And you know, should I write my best book now? What am I going to do when I'm 70? You know.
That's good.
It's really helpful to be, you know, it's a documentation of like where I am at this point, and this is how it is, and to be honest about that, like, oh, it's not worse and it's not better than this. I mean, this is this.
Did the choice to use synthesizer sounds that are not the most modern, cool sounds or something, did that spring from that thought of doing something like that has also some imperfection or...
The thought of that, like, basically anything can be beautiful if you make it beautiful. You know, if you zoom in on something that seems unnecessary, or you know, if you're stubborn enough, then it can come super essential and super necessary. Like that is a kind of that's also like also in improvised concerts. You know, when you play together and the blah blah blah, things are going well maybe, and then you suddenly do something that you think sounds awful. And like, oh my God, did I just play that? Oh, this sound? Did I actually save that sound in my sound bank there on that keyboard? Or like, you can get so like, but if you embrace that, I mean, it's not always possible, but sometimes if you embrace like the mistake and put extra focus on it and really like treat it as, but this is my friend too, you know, But yeah, and this little friend needs to shine. I will try to make that happen. You know, I it needs some care and some, you know, that's sometimes it can be hard to do that fully in a concert situation, but when it succeeds, that can be some of the most like strong moments, I think.
Yeah, that's like the feeling when you're trying to play on an instrument, right? I'm going to play this really abstract line and then you play accidental blues instead.
Yeah.
I imagine ding dong and you'd be like, oh, it just sounds like blues. Oh no. There's no way back now.
But someone in the audience might actually think, wow.
Yeah, because
this blues line right now is the beautiful, most beautiful thing possible.
Yeah, because it can get its own. Because it creates its own tonality and then it becomes its own thing inside the thing instead of just being a part of the thing.
Yeah.
So.
But that's so much part of the listening, isn't it? Like, having open ears to like, okay, but to be genuinely surprised and let yourself like, go with that or whatever appears.
So when you how was your process like while recording it? Was it like writing music, or was it like improvising and this texture maybe, or a mix, or how did you create the album? Like
it's been different for different tracks, and many things have been emerging from improvisations and some songs just came where I wrote like both music and lyrics like simultaneously almost and just having to like, okay, this is the song, this will be the sounds, and other songs have been more emerging from, okay, this is the sound I need to use, what do I want to say with that, and so the process has been, it was just experimentation, so it's been really different, like, from different songs.
Yeah, whatever works, kind of.
Yeah. But also, like, changing strategies, like, during the process has also been a key thing. Mm. Like, okay, this worked yesterday, but it doesn't work today. I have to try another tool or,
not be dogmatic about it.
Dogmatic in dogmatic inside the dogma.
Yeah.
Chaos is the only constant.
Yeah.
Because it's a quite varied album. It has like a lot of different, to my ears at least, like hints at different, maybe different genres or different things, which is probably things you've heard. Like you talked about, like it's a representation of everything you've heard, inspired by everything you've heard through your entire life or whatever.
Mm.
So it's very interesting in that sense. It jumps around, but it's always, to my ears, like listening to it, it always has like this unsettling feeling throughout the whole album. Yeah. Like it is dark when it's happy, kind of.
Yeah.
But also the happy, the dark songs often have like a happy twist to them.
Yeah.
Like, or like a smirk, like a little.
Yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's true, and it's always like that when I, you know, it's hard to not. It's always some kind of dualism too. Is this really a happy song or is this really a sad song? Like at first glance, you may be perceive something, but hopefully it will be like juxtaposes, like hidden underneath in every song. This at least what I what I find interesting.
Mm, but there's more layers than the cliché depression or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, it's... I mean, also with the lyrics, I had the impression that often there was a twist to it.
Mm.
It was not just a, this is sadness, mm-hmm. and over.
Yeah.
Like often at least at the last third of the song or something, there was...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully... It has more layers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely does.
Yeah. 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 But also, I mean, I've been also working on textures a lot and mm. also like what I've also find interesting, like how to compose the form of an album and things like that. How does it fit mm. or not fit together and
mm.
In what order, like if you go from this song to this song, changing from that texture to another texture, then like what happens with your body, like I that process is also really really interesting, I think. Yeah
between songs, do you think of it as a, do you think of the format then? Like, do, because I, this was also something I thought about, like biking here, like you have when you listen to older records like from the 80s or earlier, you can really hear which side on the LP they are on, like
mm-hmm,
they're structured
mm-hmm.
and so like if you take like Metallica, like the fourth song always ends like kind of like a rock concert because then you're supposed to switch the LP or something,
yeah,
and then it goes back to like a heavy song after that, yeah. Or stuff like, do you think of the format or is it just
yeah,
like,
yeah definitely, and especially with LP there's this like two-phase form,
mm.
but within a larger form.
Mm.
Of course, it's I think it's really crucial, like how you build up one side, and how you want to leave that feeling of like after this last song on the A side that you, okay, what's the next side, and
mm.
then it should have something, you know. Drawing something really
captivating
for yeah. the first track of the B-side, stuff yeah. like that, of mm. course, and how you end something, it's like, yeah, that's so also finishing the B-side, like that's kind of, yeah, it's so important,
mm-hmm.
or I you can really do some things
mm.
with that, so I think it's really interesting too.
What's the last song? Because I listened to the digital version. So what's the what's the last song on the A side?
Or is it an LP?
It's on LP. Yeah, I think maybe the last song is Hope.
No, yeah, that's off the album. The last song, but on the first side.
On the first side. Oh, maybe that's
Metal.
Is that Shoes? It was a long time since.
Sorry, it's a very specific question.
Yeah. I don't remember, I'm sorry.
Because there was one song where the end was speaking about that light with the speed of light pierces through the dark.
Mm-hmm.
A line like this in the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt really strong, and I thought, well, like, oh, is this the midpoint of the album? Like, I remember having that thought
mm-hmm.
when listening to it a couple of times.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe it wasn't. Because I never checked. I just listened to the music.
Yeah.
I should have bought the album.
That's the danger of digital, right?
Yeah,
you
yeah,
lose
yeah.
these,
or
you don't. Maybe you gain something else, but
you
the format changes. So
yeah,
please, because
you don't hold the vinyl in your hand.
Yeah, and you don't turn
cover
it.
And stuff,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just. I didn't want to stand up from my chair just to click and see what song I'm at right now.
Wonder, I mean, someone will make this probably like a digital vinyl, so you have to just change the MP3s. Like,
that sounds so.
But I mean, it's going to happen, right? Someone probably already done this
with virtual reality.
Yeah,
virtual
yeah.
Please turn the vinyl on. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm actually doing a. Speaking of like that, that thing, I'm doing my first cassette.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's coming out in December. Hopefully, it should be. But where we both will make a cassette and you know a USB flash drive that's packed into a cassette, so it looks like a cassette. Because obviously, maybe it's only bearded collectors that buy cassettes. I don't know. Maybe some young people also buy cassettes.
You go to the noise scene. Yeah. They are really into cassettes.
Yeah. So maybe there's some hope there. But we will do half-half. And then we will actually have... do you know this format of like children's books? Normally it's like Disney books, Disney story with a cassette. With a story.
Yeah. I had a Rutentuten Patrouille,
here's the story of blah blah blah, and when you hear the sound,
then you turn the page. Yeah.
So we will do. that's the format we're going for. So we've been working with an illustrator. So
who are we?
It's Herman Münzing.
Oh yeah.
Electronic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's very cool.
He's very cool. Yeah.
I've seen some really great concerts with him.
Yeah.
It's always like
mind-blowing
stuff.
Yeah. He's fantastic. So we've been preparing for this recording for a long time and working on different, because also we made a lot of, because it's the collaboration thing again that I really like with involving this illustrator that... he got a recording from one of our duo concerts, and then he made some pictures from that and gave to us. And then we treated those pictures as like graphic scores inspirational points. And we recorded some new music out of those pictures and sent them to the illustrator, who made some new music new pictures from that. And we got that. So we've been doing a lot of back and forth things like how because it's kind of in a way never ending loop that goes different directions. So now we have chosen those pictures that we're going to use for the book, and then we will record it quite soon.
That's a really cool format. Because I feel like since there is a main format, but that format doesn't feel like a format. Like the digital doesn't feel. It doesn't have. I mean, it's efficient and it's practical, but that's what it is. Kind of, it doesn't have its own life. Kind of, so I feel like this is the time to experiment with format and try to find something that it has, like some value, that can bring something more to. So it's a really cool idea with the turning the page and the pictures.
You did experiment with the format of releasing your music already on some other albums, right? Like Sekten, the for work, for exercise, what is
music
it?
For exercise,
music for exercise, right?
Yeah, it's a headband with a music player inside.
Is it like, so it's like an MP3 or not MP3, but like a
it's a jack. So you can just plug in your earphones into small, like mini jack stick, and
that's also a very cool idea.
I was again just listening to it on my speakers, and then I thought like, okay, but I should do exercise right now, I guess. Like, I'm not experienced this music correctly.
But yeah, of course you can do both, like just listening to it. But I mean, that was also like it was fun for us to work with that, like kind of programmed music, in the sense that we do it for like, okay, so if we ought to exercise, then we would do a warm up, and then we would do this, and then we would do that. How did that translate into music, or like, how would we write music for that? It's
The ritual of exercise.
So just finding outer sources that tells you or points your music in new directions. It's always really, it's really interesting. It's just fun.
Did you try to sell it to like Fitness World or something? have you got any offers there?
No, I don't think they're maybe not the target group for music, but maybe it's just my prejudice. I haven't really tried, so
I think
it's just my prejudice.
I think because a lot of the music there is maybe not specific for exercise, but more specific for energy. So maybe exercise is what they really need, not energy.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I think format is really interesting, and how do you, because it's really super convenient with the digital format. It's, I'm not saying like, oh, let's kill digital music.
Let's kill the internet. Yeah.
But I mean, I just appreciate like the physical sense of like that you can touch something, that you can, you know, not only look but also feel and touch, like almost a tactile person. I really enjoy like, how does this piece of paper feel in my fingers, or
it feels real, right?
Yeah,
like because I bought actually some digital music the other day because I really wanted to listen to it, and it's not anywhere else, and I don't have a LP player, so there is and I'm not don't know if I'm going to get one. I don't know. I mean, it's not like this decision. But then you buy it, and I don't feel like I own it, kind of. You know what I mean? Because I have a link, and I have a zip file, and I have some files.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really feel real. But I mean, I can listen to the music, and I get the experience, but doesn't feel like I own it in the same way as.
I mean, do you ever own music when you?
But no, but I own all the Metallica CDs. I own I have them, and I can look at them and.
No, I bought some digital releases that just are digitally only releases, and I totally agree. I sometimes even forget about having them because they just you never had this experience of having it as a physical object.
I wonder how this will play out. I'm not coming to any conclusions, but I thought about it, like, because we need something more physical than digital, but more practical than LP.
Or
CD also.
Yeah.
Because I think LPs are more beautiful than CD. CD is just like a shitty sized LP, kind of. Like the cover is too small to get anything out of it. So it's kind of like...
books are a good idea.
Yeah, books are good. Yeah. I also made a Matchbox. When was that? Yeah, that was probably the... second or third release with Korsiken. Also just, I mean, and it's still, I mean, I have so many Matchboxes because I had to buy like, I don't know, like 3,000 Matchboxes or so. So I still have lots of them at home, and I still enjoy them. They're really, really pretty and square, so it's like a mini CD or a mini LP thing. But it's also matches. You can actually use the matches, and then there's this download code. And of course, it doesn't, you know, it's not like having the music physically, like at a disc, but it's still, you know, you have this little Matchbox.
It's like merchandise, kind of,
I mean, yeah.
I mean, maybe that's like a bad, maybe that's a bad word. It's like
but it is. But I mean, I just hoped that, you know, it would feel more real than just having the digital file. Yeah,
I think it will. Yeah,
yeah.
Like just like the headband also, like or whatever you sweat upon. I don't know. It feels even though it's just the files are in, it's not like a disc, but it must feel more real than just the digital or drowning on Spotify, whatever happens with music.
Yeah,
but it also fits the band to have Matchbox. I think like the music has some childlike joy or to it. I think. That project.
Yeah.
That's more like a rock band? Can you call it a rock band? Is that like...
I don't know. That was like...
A
like...
box?
That's like a matchbox.
Yeah, I mean, that has always been... I also heard some previous podcasts of yours that mm-hmm. you talked about, like, not fitting in to, you know, a specific genre, or like feeling that you fall between. That's totally... That has been, you know... a main thing for me that also with that band Kosirken, it was like, oh, we played like in jazz scenes, and then it was like, oh, but you're a pop band, you should totally go for the pop market. And it's like, okay. So and we ended up having like this booker, and it was really, really hard for him to sell us anywhere. It was like, and if we eventually managed to play at some somewhat more popish scene, it was like, oh, you're so avant-garde, like it's so crazy and strange. It's like, okay. So all that all that ended up with me like trying to identify myself with like who am I, or like where do I belong. And luckily the Danish jazz scene is quite embracive, I think, you know, so I can still, you know, identify as a jazz musician, even though I'm on the outskirts of whatever. It's not important for me with genres, but of course I need somewhere to belong, or a starting point to where I look, you know, I'm part of this record label, I can do whatever I want, and I can call it whatever I want, and still I can have kind of my roots in like the jazz scene, because the Danish jazz scene is big enough for that, or like it's embracive enough for that. So that's that's really nice.
It's always I just remember like about the pop like the pop scene not being another thing. I remember, I think I saw a documentary once about this Norwegian producer Stargate, you know them? They produced music for Beyonce and shit like that. So I think they tried to pitch a song, and there was acoustic guitar on it. It was like supposed to be a pop track, and the radio stations or whoever they pitched to, I don't remember, probably some record producers or whatever. And they were like, no, this is not going to work. There's acoustic guitar on it, and it's it's too, they're not ready for that. And just like, it's just like a normal track. It's nothing special about it, apart from that there is an acoustic guitar in the track. It's not really wild. It's like, I think it became a hit. I don't remember which track it was. But this image is so interesting, where it's just like this really small element that is probably not so important, just makes somehow for very specific I don't know, it just makes so strange that this thing makes it something else, when it's quite apparent that everything is,
it's a very normal
pop song, but I guess we all do that in some sense, right? But we don't know where
I
we
mean,
do
just
it
just put some electric effect on a jazz band, and no traditional jazz critic or musician will be will say this is real jazz anymore, you know, like this.
Oh,
it's... even if it's just the slightest electric effect or something, they go like, oh, this is already, wow, modern.
The distortion on the guitar, it's fusion.
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm probably guilty of the same. I just don't know where I do it. Or maybe I should try to figure out where I do it. But I find this thing interesting where you, I don't know.
But how did it then end up with Kosirken? Kosirken, that you were in between the scenes, right?
Yeah,
like you were in between. Like it was not pop enough in a way for the bookers and the audience, and maybe the jazz scene outside of Denmark thought it's not jazz enough or something. Or how was that?
Yeah,
because you made like
four albums. And over quite many years, but it just ended with, we were just stuck there in between. But I mean, we had some audience. It's not like no one liked it or so, but we never got rooted anywhere. So, but yeah. And eventually it was just, we were just finished with the band. It was also the...
Like artistically, like, okay, we've done whatever we can do with this and it's not rewarding anymore?
Maybe I was just fed up with the, like, that it should be so complicated. I just ran out of energy for, like, oh, but this is, like, how can I, you know, I love the music, but, you know, I was just finished with the struggle around it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also because that's maybe at that point, like the last few years of Kosiakin's existence, I started to go more and more into electronic music. There was also changing, the interest for me started to change over into something else. And yeah, basically, except my up release, I haven't been releasing so much written music lately. Because I've been mainly focusing on freely improvised music. And going deeper into electronics.
On stage as well, when you improvise?
Yes.
Because that's what I've seen when I've seen you play lately. Mm-hmm. That's what I've seen, improvising with pedals and effects. And,
yes, exactly. Yeah. I'm not working with Ableton or like a computer on stage. It's not that kind of electronics, but...
No.
But yeah.
The effects.
Effects. And,
loops.
Tweaking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's also what you do on the Pistol 9.
Yeah, that was that was actually my first recording where I used anything. So that was really early stages, and I didn't have so many things or items to work with. But that has, those things tend to grow. You know, if you get into the pedal world,
You buy too many of them.
2 million kronos later.
No, I try to be really... I try to just take one pedal at a time.
I think that's the... If you buy too many, you'd never get into any of them. Because a lot of these pedals, they can do a lot of stuff, but you have to spend some hours with them. And
many hours, because every new pedal is like almost like a new instrument.
Yeah.
Mm.
You have to... get into them
then you
deeply.
Can yeah you can so some pedals you can trick also to do things they're not supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
that's where the fun begins.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
When they're confused.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pedals.
Yeah. I managed to confuse the pedal.
Yeah. I have a pedal which I can really confuse. I don't think it's supposed to do this sound. It's like this ring modulator Moog.
Mm-hmm. And that one.
So what you can do is if you put up expression pedal in the frequency thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you put the frequency on top on the pedal and then push the expression pedal, it goes higher than it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
It keeps going for some reason. There's more than it's supposed to do, which is crazy. So, this is max, but no, I can actually get it to 11.
To 11.
Yeah. I'm doing the Spinal Tap on ring modulator.
Yeah, that's great.
Which is interesting because you never know which of these pedals can do things they're not supposed to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. That's also the element of surprise that, you know.
Yeah.
And also I find it really a good thing to know your pedals inwards and outwards and, back and forth. There will always be some element of not knowing where you can get tricked or you can, and that's really to not have 100% control. It has to be that way because otherwise it's,
There is, Janane and me, we recorded something with Matt And Janane made my flute go through, was it the ring modulator?
It was the ring modulator.
Yeah. And then I listened back to it and I was like, wow, 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 this is the best sound ever. I want to use this on a new track. It's so awesome. Yeah, I can't recreate it. Sorry, yeah, it's
cause,
over.
Because you play like a minor third on the, and then I, on the frequency, I managed to, because you can get a really deep bass note from a high note.
Yeah.
And I managed to hit those twice in a row, like bow, bow, oops. And but I have no chance to do that again. That was the moment. It's lost forever.
Sounds magic.
Oh, but that's also the beauty of it.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't recorded, so it's there. It will be released at some point. So.
Yeah.
But when you work with pedals and improvising, do you like check them out like deeply yourself, or do you do this as a process live in concerts, in rehearsals with others? How is your process around that?
If I get a new pedal, I try to not introduce it on stage until a certain point, you know. And of course some pedals have more nuances and more a higher level of complexity, so then it would take longer before I introduce it on stage. But I try to go deep into a pedal before I
sitting by yourself, checking it out.
So how many pedals are you then using live right now, usually, roughly?
Depends. Maybe 5 or 6, plus a mixer that I also, I try to... I have basically the same setup all the time, but I also try to, change a bit, like the order of it, and leave 2 pedals home, because now I have to, so I don't have all the options in the world. I can create some more creativity space sometimes that you have less to choose from, that can open up things.
I totally forgot that the order of how which pedal goes into which pedal is also completely changing the sound. When you said it right now, I was like,
That's also
since I'm not a guitarist.
That's a nice thing with the when I play together with Herman Münzing.
Mm.
He's always like, "Oh, what should I do?" And he has this notebook with like different setups and plans, and like, "Oh, I think I should, for today I've thought of this order of the pedals, and I should connect it like this, blah 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 blah." And it's totally inspiring. So when I play with him, it's like, okay, let's I have to change something. Let's surprise myself, what happens if I do this? And sometimes but most of the times it's a really nice thing that you have something in your setup that surprises you.
Pedals.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Enough nerd talk.
I could go on for hours with that. Yeah.
So that that album you said will be recorded soon.
Mm-hmm.
And it will take the format of a book with illustrations.
Mm-hmm.
That's the next thing coming out from you.
Yes. And after that, it will be Shitney. We'll release our second album in April.
We didn't speak about the Earthcore.
Yeah.
We can do that.
A while ago.
I mean, we have a few more minutes.
So that's a collaboration, right?
Yes.
With Maria Faust and a person I don't remember the name of.
Katrine Amsler.
Yeah.
Oh, you should check out her solo record. She just came a few months ago. It's really great.
Okay.
It's a collaboration, and we have very different backgrounds or similar. I mean, it depends on, like, but we took, in a way, we could all three of us say that we have a jazz background. But, I mean, Maria Faust, she has also this Eastern European, like Soviet background, and she has been playing a lot of classical music. So she has a really, just her way of composing and playing, like, has a really strong voice. Katrina, she started out as a jazz piano player and went to conservatory in Malmö. And she has been going deeper and deeper into like sound design and music for computer games and for film and for motion pictures. And but she's really into like the sound design part. And we've been talking about me a lot. So yeah. So we have very different approaches to how to make music or how to improvise, and it's really it's just genuinely joyful to work with that mixture.
Does the music come from improvisation?
It's pure.
Okay, because it improv. It sounded really composed when I listened to it, but that's a compliment, I guess. Because it sounded like there's a lot of overdubs and stuff like that, but
there's not.
Wow,
of course we've been editing because every time you improvise it ends up being a little bit too long so we've been cutting out parts and maybe of course in the mixing process maybe we've been enhancing something more in the front but otherwise I mean it's purely improvised music and the next album is also improvised.
Is it recorded? Because it's a very good sounding record, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Where was it recorded?
We recorded it in Konzertkirchen, actually.
So that's a room with reverb.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it can be good, it can be bad, who knows?
Yeah, we were standing just behind in front of the organ up on the balcony there. Yeah, it was really nice.
Yeah.
So we had.
Oh, yeah, that sends the reverb only in one direction.
Yeah.
That's smart.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, drums, I tend to struggle with the room a bit.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Cymbal especially.
Mm. Yeah, or your snare drum becomes this thing that is so powerful, which is great for certain music.
Mm.
But if you hit the snare drum, it goes like, bah!
Yeah.
And if you actually just wanted to play a soft note, it's sometimes a bit over the top. But yeah.
Yeah.
It, for certain stuff, it's actually amazing sounding room. So
But rooms are so, I mean, it's so like a co-player in music. Now I have this little collaboration with Johanna Borkert, the piano player, German piano player.
Okay.
And we're playing in coin laundries in Copenhagen.
Coin
laundry? Mundfisk.
Sounded like something you do to skip taxes.
That's your association, yeah.
I'm laundering coins.
Very efficient.
One coin at a time.
In Denmark, where no one uses coins anymore.
We don't accept the bills, only the coins.
You're going to perform it in coin laundries, you said?
Yeah, we play one concert and we have
three
more concerts in coin laundries.
Is it during the fall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we play two on Friday and then we play 28th, I think, September. The last one. So we found this guy that has several coin laundries throughout Copenhagen and he was game for it, like, yeah, please do.
Yeah, nothing happens there anyway. Except for beer.
It's fun. Cool. Like both the room, it's really nice, but also the kind of it's kind of almost inappropriate to play there, like improvised music, and people come to watch
read the book or something. Yeah,
yeah, and you know, some people get really curious, and some people get a bit scared. Like, can I be here? Like, of course, we try to make it inviting. But it's just like the room or like where you play music can really change the music and turn it into something else. It's Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Is there, this might sound like a weird question, but is there something in Scandinavia about Myntbask places, about these coin laundries? Because
I don't know. We don't have them in Sweden very much.
Okay.
I've never seen them in Norway.
I was on, like, this is 2-3 years ago. I was on tour in Japan and we played on a festival, I think Sukiyaki Festival or something.
Oh.
Small place on the countryside. And we walked through, like, on the left side, a huge rice field. On the right side, some little shops. And suddenly there's a Myntbask. But, like, with the Danish name Myntbask.
What?
It was the most random thing ever. So I was just thinking if...
the Danes invented the Danes washing with coins.
A specific cult about it or something that they exported to Japan. And I mean, I'm talking about countryside, right?
Yeah.
Like,
that's
really...
I took a picture because I just said,
what? But you didn't ask someone about...
I think I was walking alone on that in that moment, so I couldn't ask someone right away.
That sounds
I mean, like, there was no one of the... I didn't see any Japanese person in that moment. I was very, very calm. It was in the evening.
Mm. But there it was, suddenly.
Yeah. Myntbask.
Sounds too good to be true.
I have to look up that picture, maybe. Yeah. That will be the picture of the podcast now.
Yeah.
But that's, do you want to plug your website or something, or where people can look up the dates you play or buy your CDs?
Oh, yeah. That's really good, because then I actually have to update my webpage.
You're welcome.
Which I haven't been doing for some years. But if I just say my website, it's just my name, KarinWikström.com.
Yeah.
So that's really good. I have to update some things there. Yeah. Otherwise, most of my recordings are available at Ilk Music. But I'll really try to update my web pages.
But
you're playing some more concerts for the end of the year
that you want to play? Yeah. I mean, depending on Corona status and such.
Let's assume things are happening.
Yeah, but I'm also part of an opera thing.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, in Sweden, in Halmstad. It's a really small town, but they have a lot of interesting things going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's also, we're three composers, all electronic musicians, and three opera singers. And yeah, we have this opera performance.
That sounds interesting. Will that be recorded and released, or will that be only in person?
I don't know. Maybe some kind of a documentation will happen. But I don't know if it will be released. I'm not in charge of that, at least. Thankfully.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then thank you very, very much for coming. It was great to talk with you.
Yeah. Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, and for everyone else, please come back and listen to the next episode of Uncovering the Seniors as well. Have a good day.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.